Parkcast, the UK's original theme park podcast.
Welcome back to Parkcast, park fans. We're a podcast for theme park fans. We're here every week talking about exciting things in the theme park industry and chatting to some interesting people along the way as well. I'm Bex, and this week we are doing something which, I mean, if I had a bucket list, it wouldn't have even been on there because I wouldn't have thought that this would be possible. But hey, here we are. And where we are is at Europa Park. Actual Europa Park. I am literally here. I am in the Europa Park podcast studio. They have one. If you've ever been to the park and you're in the French section, it is there. You can look into it. They record podcasts from there. They come out every couple of weeks. And I am here right now to record this episode of Parkcast. This is unbelievable. And I am joined by Marcus Ernst, who's a creative project manager at Mac One. Marcus, welcome to Parkcast.
Thanks for the invitation. Great being here.
Well, thank you. This is unbelievable. I know the listeners will be going, oh my God, Bex is losing her mind, because this is just fabulous to be here, honestly. And thank you for giving your time to come and speak to us, because I can imagine creative project manager, Europa Park, Mac One, it's not a quiet job. You have a lot going on at all times.
Yeah, that's right. But I'm really happy to be here along with you, and looking forward to the chat and to the conversation.
Absolutely. So let's start at the start then. So how did you end up here at Europa Park?
I have no idea.
Walked in one day and was like, "Can I come and work here, please?"
No, just kidding. I wouldn't say this is the classical theme park nerd or theme park fan story, which you find rather often, to be honest. I grew up here in this region. I'm from this region, and I grew up here as a kid, and I came to Europa Park every year with my family. After studying, I didn't start here right away. So I came here across several stations, and I remember going down the Autobahn to my former employee, and always seeing the Silver Star and seeing the Euro Tower. Yeah. When I looked to the right, and I thought, well, if you studied something with media and communications, at some point you need to try to apply at Europa Park. And yeah, ultimately, I think it took me. I had to apply 7 times.
Really?
Literally 7 times. And I think in the last, in my last letter I wrote, well, come on, guys.
I've tried so hard.
Yeah, you know it. I know it. I will continue applying for all different kinds of positions.
You basically annoyed them to the
exactly.
point of giving you a
Exactly. And this is why I'm here. No, really, what always fascinated me is this combination of emotion, of storytelling, and technology.
Mm.
And this is what brought me here. And I wanted to work somewhere where they push boundaries.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, we see that as theme park fans. We see it in the attractions that mm-hmm. are here, some of the technology that's here, which is what we're going to really talk about today. But, you know, it is clear that this park is somewhere that is constantly innovating. And actually, if you go to the 50th anniversary mm-hmm. exhibition that's on at the moment, obviously for the anniversary year, you see that like so clearly laid out about how every year this is the installation that was done. Mm-hmm. This is what changed this year. And when you look at it as an overall, it's unbelievable actually to see the changes that are put in every year and how every single year the park seems to want to better itself and push the boundaries with the next thing, which we will be talking about because that is really where your role fits in mm-hmm. here. So you are creative project manager. What does that actually mean? Sort of where does that start mm-hmm. and end?
Yeah, that's a really good question. I would put it in those words. I see myself as a translator, you see, between the really creatives, you know, the crazy creative people here, and the technicians, the ones that actually need to build this. So I try to translate between the really creative, the crazy minds, and the technicians that say, okay, well, this isn't possible. And I say, well, yet it is. Let's just look at it in a different way or from a different perspective. And I try to make the even craziest ideas actually work and put them actually in production and make them run as an attraction here in the park.
So it would work in that way. So you've got a creative team who would go, mm-hmm. we want to do X, Y, or Z, and it's proper mm-hmm. like off the wall thinking, and that it's like no budget, no technological concerns. We want to do this.
Exactly.
And then you come in and you're like, let's just make it a little bit more realistic. Otherwise, my engineers are going to have a meltdown.
It is something like that, apart from the fact that it's not me alone. Obviously, mm-hmm. I'm working with a team. We're calling this team the Horizon Bleu, so the Blue Horizon. So within this, I would say this innovation think tank within MUG1, we really try to be the spearhead and really try to think creatively and without limits. And then we bring in those experts and those translators that try then to do the reality check of those ideas and think about, okay, what's the business model behind it? How can we actually make this work? Is this going to run in a theme park? Does it fit all the requirements regarding capacity and so on and so forth?
Yeah, yeah. Okay, cool. Oh, that makes, yeah, perfect sense. Okay, exciting. Sounds like a really fascinating job. I mean, your days in the office just must be unbelievable. So how does Mach 1 mm-hmm. fit in with Europa Park? Because we've heard of Mach 1, we've mm-hmm. heard of Europa Park. Obviously, they are joined and run alongside each other. But where's the crossover? How does that work?
I would put it, if I'd have to put it in really simple words, I would say the Mach 1 is like the innovation hub. And mm-hmm. it's at the intersection of the different branches of the Mach Group, where Europa Park is one of them. But we develop not only stories, do the master planning for upcoming attractions, do the project management, and we try to develop services and attractions that we can sell not only to Europa Park, but to theme parks all around the world.
Okay, yeah, so you are bigger than just Europa
exactly.
Park. You are, okay, so you're kind of like consultants for anyone. That's interesting. And we know that, well, obviously we've talked about that you are always innovating here and, you know, Mach 1 is obviously the driving force behind that. I guess you were maybe not here when you first ventured into the world of VR and things like mm-hmm. that. Was that before your time or were you here? Because it's been around as a technology for right. quite a while, but obviously it's moved on a lot in recent years.
Yeah, I'm working for Europa Park for 7 years now.
Okay.
And it's a funny thing that you're mentioning that. I think the first roller coaster, the first roller coaster that we ever equipped with virtual reality technology, most likely your audience knows this roller coaster, it's the Alpen Express. And the
yeah.
Alpen Express, it's been there for 30 years.
Yeah.
And I think it was 10 years ago, so it was in the year 2015, when we decided, okay, let's take one of our most beloved roller coasters, which is a family attraction. Everyone knows it because it has been there for 30 years.
Mm.
And let's try to do something new. And let's try putting VR on a roller coaster, which is a crazy thing if you think about it in the first place, right?
Yeah.
But I remember, although this was before I actually joined the company, the first tests that we did, I'm not sure if you know that, or if your audience does know that, the first tests with VR on a roller coaster have actually been done on the Blue Fire. Which
oh.
seems even more crazy if you
yeah.
look at it from today's perspective. Because
yeah.
back in the day, if you go back in time 10 years ago and back in technology, there weren't wireless headsets back in the day. So
yeah.
you had wired headsets. So the first test drives that we did on the Blue Fire, we did with wired virtual reality headsets.
Yeah.
And the technicians, literally, they had to bring their own laptop. And with a wired headset, they drove down the Blue Fire with the looping and the catapult style. Imagine that. So, and then, as we have proven then that it is physically and it is actually working, then we tried, okay, which roller coaster could be the first roller coaster to actually implement this thing?
Yeah, maybe
and
one without inversions.
Exactly. This is maybe not the best thing to start with, right? So if you want to convince people. But from an economical perspective, I think this was a rather smart move. Because simply put, it's a lot easier we call it a retrofit. So
yeah.
to retrofit an existing attraction with technology. It does not necessarily need to be VR, but what I mean with that is retrofitting an existing attraction with technology to breathe in new life and to tell new kinds of stories in this attraction. This is always easier, obviously, and cheaper than building an entirely new new roller coaster
yeah.
and an entirely new ride. Just
yeah.
look at Voltron, for example.
Yeah.
So what this means ultimately is that you have the same track, you have the same roller coaster that you know for decades, but you have a totally new experience. And I would say, looking back, I would say this was the golden or the secret sauce why this actually worked, because we took something that people are familiar with.
Yeah.
And we added something, but we made the entry barrier as low as possible, because we ask people, do you know the Alpen Express? And they say, well, of course, I've been riding this for 30 years. Mm-hmm. Everyone knows it. Everyone loves it. And then the only thing we had to do is telling them, well, okay, but today, try it in a different way.
Yeah.
And then we put the VR headset on.
Yeah.
And this convinced even the most critical of our guests, because after they tried it, they were immediately convinced. So this means we do not want to replace anything. It's not about VR is going to replace the attractions or the roller coaster. No, no. It's about enhancing an experience. Mm-hmm. So to say, VR is the cheat code, so to say, to do things that are physically impossible. And that's what makes it interesting.
Yeah, I mean, it is interesting that's the response that you got, because we did have a VR attraction mm-hmm. in the UK. The listeners will know it's Galactica at Alton Towers. And that wasn't that well received, especially amongst enthusiasts. It mm-hmm. was... It was. I don't know if it was how it was done, or if there was. Operationally there are challenges, and we'll come on to that. But it almost. I don't know. I think people thought that it detracted from what the attraction was itself. So did you not find that with your guests? They definitely saw it as an enhancement.
Yeah, it's. I would say, looking back, it is about the kind of what kind of story do you tell?
Okay. Yeah.
So. What I've learned is that you'd rather don't try to tell the story of the technology, because it's not technology that convinces people. It's not the technology that transports emotion. There is this principle that's called the Maya principle. It's maximum advanced, yet accepted. And I think this totally makes sense when it comes to these new kind of technologies and putting them on existing rides. And again, I think... Maybe the story would have been a different story if we had put VR on a brand new roller coaster, and if we would have claimed, well, this is the technology, this is the highest resolution headset, this is offers 3 degrees of freedom back in the day, or so. Then this tells a story of technology. But I think it's the better way to tell a story of emotion. It's trying to make people connect and resonate and to try to establish a connection mm-hmm. to the guest, because people have had their experiences and their connection to the Alpen Express coaster before.
Yeah.
And again, telling this story of emotion that you can create and tell entirely new stories and create new experiences and experience your beloved coaster, although you know it by heart, you can experience it in a totally different way every time you ride it. I think that's the secret, so to say.
So this was about 10 years ago when you made this installation. Yeah, so obviously technology's moved on mm-hmm. in that time phenomenally. But when you first installed it, I know you weren't here, but you must know the stories. Did you get any sort of apprehension from the ride op teams to go, well, this is going to be a nightmare for us if we've got to put headsets on guests? And how did the team sort of manage that and go, okay, we're not going to allow this to affect our operations, because we know as theme park fans, Europa Park operations are, there is no park in the world that's better, and I can say that confidently. So how did you go, we're going to implement this but not mm-hmm. let it detract from what we've got?
Right. So honestly, it definitely comes with its challenges. Definitely. I mean, not only capacity-wise, but let's maybe quickly focus on this point first, because this is the elephant in the room. If you're looking at from a capacity perspective or from a capacity point of view, obviously it is extremely hard, if not impossible, to reach the same capacity if you have to onboard people with any kind of technology. It doesn't matter whether it's VR or MR or AR. It doesn't matter. If you need to hand out another device and you need to explain what to do and more importantly, what not to do with this device, then this costs time, definitely. Mm-hmm. So if you're looking at this from a capacity point of view, I would say, as a rule of thumb, I'd say maybe calculate with a third, maybe a fourth of the capacity that you would have or would be able to have without the technology. Mm-hmm. So you need to frame this differently. So maybe this is an upcharge, or maybe this is an upsell, maybe this is something as a digital layer, as a digital add-on that targets a specific target group, or maybe even a niche that wants to get this and experience this add-on. Because from a capacity point of view, again, as a rule of thumb, but say, let's plan or let's calculate with maybe a third to a fourth of the capacity that you could usually have without the technology on the right. So when it comes to people per hour. And then the operational challenges, obviously, they're tremendous.
Yeah.
Because you're not talking about 5 or 10 headsets here. If you want to equip a roller coaster that has a hourly capacity of, let's say, 1,400 people per hour, and you're looking at getting maybe a third to a fourth in VR on this roller coaster, then we're talking about dozens, if not hundreds, of headsets. And from a park perspective and from park operations perspective, you really need to ask yourself the question, do you want to handle these many devices? Because every single device needs to be cleaned and disinfected after every single use, not only in pandemic times. And so this means that you're talking about really, really a lot of headsets. Mm. Do you have the infrastructure? Do you have the people that can transport this? Because if you're not able to convince the operators that are operating the very ride, if you're not even able to convince them of the technology and of the added value, then you don't even have to start trying to convince your guests.
Yeah.
And this brought us to really huge challenges when it came to operations, because there was nothing, or there is nothing off the shelf which you can just purchase off the shelf that solves this problem for you. This infrastructure problem, those issues, how to handle 100 or more headsets, how to disinfect them after every ride, how do you offer multiple contents, how do you make the onboarding time for the guests as short as possible. So we're talking about a maximum of 30 to 60 seconds. Mm-hmm. So let's imagine you have 60 seconds maximum per guest. And in this 60 seconds, you need to hand out the headset. You need to ask them, okay, what kind of content do you want to play or experience this time? You need to tell them what to do. You need to tell them what not to do. So let's imagine you have to use 5 minutes to explain people how the controller works. Then it's a simple calculation. It's not going to work.
Yeah, yeah. And I guess that fell to your team to come up with the solutions for those problems. Yeah. And clearly you did, and it still runs with a VR upcharge option now, doesn't
right.
it? 10 years later. Has the overlays have changed in that time? Mm-hmm. And I guess you've redone the video and stuff like that.
Exactly.
Because the technology's moved on.
Yeah.
Do you envisage that attraction will always have some form of VR option on it now? Or do you think there'll come a point where you go, well, we've done as much as we can with that ride layout? And I mean, I know the stories are, mm-hmm. there's infinite possibilities, mm-hmm. but do you think there'll come a point where you go, actually, we need to do something else again now? The technology has moved on so much.
Yeah, yeah, that's a good point. That's a good point. So I would say that every upcoming attraction that we're planning at Mach 1 always has this digital layer planned right from the start.
Okay.
It's part of the planning. This, again, this does not necessarily mean that it has to be VR. Not necessarily. Maybe nowadays, because technology has evolved, obviously. Maybe today we're looking more at mixed reality. And maybe if we look more towards the future, maybe we're getting to the phase where we are looking towards augmented reality.
Yeah.
So if you're looking back in time, 10 years ago, we started with VR and roller coasters. But then, as technology has evolved, 5 years later, we found, okay, now we've tried immersive technologies on a roller coaster, but now let's try to think things differently and come up with a new kind of attraction, a new kind of experience, because we want to tell different kinds of stories. And this is then when the entire free roaming VR
yeah.
emerged. And this is then when we've developed our own approach towards this free roaming virtual reality attractions. And this is when we invented Yulby. And this is 5 years ago already. And nowadays, we're looking at mixed reality. So you can clearly see that there has been an evolution in technology, starting with virtual reality, and then the free roaming was added to it. And nowadays, we're thinking about, okay, how can we tell stories when we are mixing realities? So we're mixing the digital world with the physical world, with physical props, with scent, with haptics and so. And yeah, this is where we are right now.
Wow. That sounds like it's got an endless level of possibility of where that could end up. So the Yulby thing, mm-hmm. If anyone's not heard of that. So this is VR headsets, which you can go and you can choose a sort of overlay, and it could be like a quest or a story mm-hmm. or a game. And at the moment you're kind of set up in the Blue Fire, where you go into the Blue Fire queue, right? Yeah. That it's that bit, and you walk through it and you do see people with these headsets mm-hmm. on. So that's what they're doing.
Exactly. So this is our Yulby attraction that we have here inside Europa Park. And this was one of our key learnings, that since virtual reality is so hard to explain if you're not experiencing it firsthand, you're really well advised if you make it as transparent and as visible as possible. So I think putting it into the queue line of the Blue Fire was a smart move, since we have roughly or around 16,000 people going through this queue line per day.
Yeah.
So you create a tremendous amount of visibility, because people, when they're queuing for Blue Fire and they see people in the headsets, and they ask themselves, okay, what are they doing there? What are they experiencing? And this creates I would say, a pull factor. And although it's an upcharge, it drives people into the free roaming attraction, because again, people are asking themselves, what are they experiencing there? I want to try the same thing. And this is an important part. So if we're looking towards what are maybe current trends, or what are maybe upcoming trends, I would still say that the free roaming is something that people are not able to experience at home. That's why it makes sense to have this as a location-based entertainment attraction. Because, for example, in our free roaming attraction, it's 80 square meters of free roaming space. And usually, at least my living room isn't that size, right?
And you've got the coffee table in the way.
Exactly. And you can go even bigger. And I think if we're looking at trends, still the free roaming remains a very important trend, although it's not that much of a trend anymore, but I would still say that it still remains extremely important. But what we've learned is that social and gamification becomes more and more importantly. So when we started with VR on roller coasters, and we started with the free roaming attraction, those were all single player attractions or single player experiences. But we found out that people do not want to feel isolated in the VR headset. They want to mingle around, and they want to chat with their friends, and they want to see their friends and their avatars, and they want to play together. So we have to come up with solutions like that. So nowadays, which I think totally makes sense, we're looking at multiplayer experiences. And if we look a little bit further down the road and into the future, what particularly interests me is the smart glasses.
Yeah.
And the question, what comes after the smartphone? And I think if we're looking 2 to 3 years into the future, and this is not, we're not talking about 5 years or 10 years in the future, it's just around the corner, so to say, then I'm convinced that we will ultimately face a bring your own device situation, where people will come with their Meta Ray-Bans, with their Meta Oakleys, and all the other brands that we will see emerging in the upcoming years. And the question remains on our side, on the park side, is if people are coming with their own devices anyways, the question is, how do you want to be part of their experience? So do you actually happen on this kind of platform, or don't you? So if people come, to give a brief example, if people come with their smart glasses to Europa Park and they ask their glasses, hey, what roller coaster is this? Then I see two different options. First option is the glasses just, they don't know. So they will respond, I don't know. This is any kind of roller coaster, I don't know. Or if you actually happen on this platform, then maybe the glass will tell you, well, this is the Voltron coaster and the current queuing time is 25 minutes. Yeah. And by the way, I don't know, maybe there's a 30% off discount for your on-ride photo.
Yeah,
So I think theme parks need to ask themselves the question, since people will be coming with these kind of devices anyways, do you want to be part of this platform? Do you want to happen there with your product, with your service? Or don't you want to do that?
Yeah, that's really interesting, because I think there is still a lot of apprehension about things like Meta glasses. Mm-hmm. A lot of theme parks are still, you know, they will class them like any recording device, so you can't wear them on the attractions, right, and stuff like that. Whereas you're kind of saying, well, the technology, it's going to happen anyway. Right. We can't stop this from coming down the hill. So how do we be a part of it, mm-hmm, and actually use it to, A, enhance our guest experience, but I suppose, B, also your commercial team find a way to anchor into that as well, and do something that makes some money off the back of it. And that makes perfect sense. So you can imagine a world where you could be walking around Europa Park with your Meta glasses on, or whatever, mm-hmm, brand of digital glasses you may choose, and you might get bespoke experiences, mm-hmm, just because you are wearing those glasses.
Right. Right, exactly. This is definitely one scenario that I see in the upcoming future. And again, I'm not thinking that this is going to happen in 5 to 10 years. I think this is going to happen in 2 to 3 years. And I think theme parks really need to be prepared for this, for this scenario. The second scenario that I see, and I think this is a development that just makes sense if you look at the history of, again, the 10 years ago, equipping the first roller coaster with VR headsets, then going to free roaming. But still, we are in a situation where we are handing out yet another device at every single attraction. And I think it would be a smart move that at some point in the future, maybe we only hand out one device once people are entering the park. So maybe we give them, once we're there with a nice, really in a small form factor, maybe we rent those mixed reality devices and you get them at the park entrance.
Yeah.
So maybe for an additional fee, you rent them per day.
Yeah.
And then with your companion app, you see, well, okay, today I'm at Europa Park, and with this device, I can experience those 10, 15 different attractions in the different themed areas.
Yeah.
So what I mean with this is that we add like a digital layer, like a digital add-on on top of the analog experience that we already have. So this means that, again, I'm not saying that this shall ever replace the analog and the physical experience. No, it shall be an opt-in. It shall be an add-on where you can choose if you want to experience the attraction in the classic, in the analog way, or if you want to have this digital add-on. But in terms of economics and hardware operations, I think this move absolutely makes sense, because it liberates us from the situation where we have to equip every single attraction with hundreds of headsets and handing them out in the queue line, causing yet another longer waiting time for the other guests, rather than just handing out the device once people enter the theme park.
Yeah, and the device being literally, effectively, a pair of glasses.
Right.
So it takes two seconds to put on, rather than fitting a full like face mask type headset.
Exactly.
Yeah, it's really interesting. And we've talked about on the podcast before about AI really in theme parks, and how theme parks are going to capitalize on that, and how it can be used to enhance a guest experience. And I guess this is exactly it. And, you know, if you can build things into it in terms of, you know, This ride's only got this minute queue at the moment. Mm-hmm. We recommend that you do this route, and you can do things like that, which is so beneficial as a guest. If it doesn't have to be a big scary, oh, AI's really bad and awful. Yeah. It can be used for good to create a better experience.
Totally. I totally agree. But this is our job, to think about solutions that make people not afraid of the technology, but invite them to use the technology to make their lives easier and make their visit at the theme park easier. And I know we've been there before. We've all had these discussions that using AI maybe we can create our perfectly planned theme park visit. But let's be honest, I think what makes a theme park visit so interesting and so tempting and so special is the fact that for once, maybe this one day, you are not forced to, you don't have any appointments. You don't have to be somewhere at a specific time. Of course, with AI, you could dynamically create your ideal park visit where you are able to ride all of the big roller coasters. But is this still fun? Mm. That's the question. And I think this kind of chaos is part of the game and yeah. is part of the experience. And I think it's crucial. When I go to the theme park with my wife and my two kids, of course, I go there with a plan. But I just have to look at my kid. He's 6 years old now. And I see, okay, now I can throw away my plan because he wants to do something entirely different.
I'm with you there. I've got a 4-year-old. And I know, you know, in the park today, as much as I want to go straight to Voltron, she's going to go to Ireland.
Exactly.
She wants to go on the Barbar coaster.
and I think you have to implement AI in a smart way, that it's not forcing you to do anything, or it's like a companion.
Yeah.
It can give you advice so that you can dynamically adjust your plans, maybe.
Yeah.
And maybe bring you or lead you to areas of the park that you usually do not visit that often, for example.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. I think that could really help. And as you say, it's about enhancing. It's not about trying to take over or make we have been on theme park days, I think. Especially if you go to maybe a Disney park where mm-hmm. it is, you have to be here at this time because I've got a queue for this time, and it does start to feel a bit like a military mission. Are there any other trends that you're kind of seeing in your world that you think we should be looking out for, like exciting developments that you're like, mm-hmm. okay, I can see this technology coming in, and I think we're going to see more of this?
Okay, so apart from the bring your own device scenario with the smart glasses and the we rent one mixed reality device per guest and per day, I definitely see an entertainment case in the near future. What do I mean with entertainment case for these kind of devices? I'm asking myself the question, what comes after the 4D and the 3D and the IMAX cinema? So where's the development happening in the cinema? And I think what could be very interesting is if we look at how can we potentially reinvent cinemas, because cinemas have a huge capacity. And I think this should be in the interest of the big OEMs or the big manufacturers such as Meta and such, because they want to bring people into headsets, right? So if this is their ultimate goal, then I think a cinema is the perfect place.
Mm.
Maybe we're not there yet when it comes to the form factor of the headsets, because you do not want to wear them for a full 70 or 80 or 90 minute full feature length movie. But maybe we're getting there at some point. And this reminds me of the scenario or the situation that we had with the roller coaster, because again, I think the same rule might apply. It is something that people know and that are familiar with because they've been going to the cinemas for decades, centuries, and we add something on top.
Mm-hmm.
So if we are able to think things further from 4D and adding scent and wind and all those physical sensations and enhance a classical movie experience with those physical sensations. And if we can think this just one step further, if we make immersive experiences, immersive movie experiences, I think this could be really the next big thing, the next big use case, not only for these kind of devices, which would simplify or maybe ultimately lead to mass adoption. But this could be a significant or could have a significant impact to theme parks, I think.
Yeah. Yeah. And it is that same thing, isn't it? When you go to see a film in the cinema, you do want to completely immerse yourself in the same way that you do in a theme park. Do you have much to do with rides where it's it is mixed technology. So I'm thinking like at Europa Park, something like Snorri Turin, mm-hmm. where it's a physical ride for the most part, but then you go in to a little bit and you've got a, not VR, but a, right. a screen-based yeah. element of the ride. Is that something that you get involved in, where it's like we want to do a physical, something physical, but we want a another sort of digital option within it as well?
Exactly. So as I mentioned in the beginning, without revealing too much, because I still want to remain some secret, right? Because
we hate secrets.
For your listeners, I mean. So what we're thinking about and what we're currently working on is exactly that. So combining a ride experience, or where a ride experience is at least a part of the attraction, a part of the experience, with a free-roaming experience. So where you have different... different ways of experiencing and interacting and getting in touch with the story. And I think apart from personalization, which is, of course, simplified by Gen AI, I think this will become really important, that you want to have a different experience, or my experience in that same attraction might differ from your experience in the attraction. And when it comes to personalization, I think this is could be the next evolutionary step, where you do not only consume an attraction passively, but actively. So you actively become a part of the attraction, and you, based maybe on your decisions that you make, maybe your experience will then differ from okay. others' experience. So
yeah.
what I'm basically saying is that every time you experience this attraction, you experience it differently.
It's like when we were growing up, I don't want to age you and put you at my age, but you'd have a book and you'd say, right,
exactly.
what do you want to do next? Oh, I'll do this. And
exactly.
that will give you the difference.
I love those books. I love those books. I love them. It's the, how are they called? I think Choose Your Own Adventure.
Yeah. Okay. Oh, cool. So Euromia 2.0, Choose Your Own Adventure. There you go. You can have that idea on me. Okay. That's really cool, because again, for theme park fans, we come to theme parks a lot. Mm-hmm. And it's just a way of keeping something fresh, but in a simple way. Yeah, I like it. Obviously, you've done a lot of work with this technology since you've been here, but the technology's moved on, like we said, in 10 years. There must have been times where it's gone wrong and you thought, this is going to be great, but actually it hasn't worked for whatever reason. Mm-hmm. Have you experienced that?
Yeah, I think I mentioned it before in a sentence or two. So when the technology gets too complicated, and it gets too complicated to explain it to your guest, then that's an immediate showstopper. If you need 5 minutes to explain to your guest what not to do with the controller, with the headset, then you're totally lost. So it needs to be intuitive. And really I'm convinced that no one is interested in the technology part of it, but it's about the story and what new kind of experience are you able to experience using this technology. So this is one thing. So don't try to tell a story about the technology, because this is not going to work, and the technology needs to be or go into the background, so that it's not the main part of the story, right? Okay. The second thing that we've learned specifically with our free roaming attractions, is that location matters, definitely. If you have a crappy location then you don't have walk-in guests.
Yeah.
Simply put, and this is something that we've learned here, especially with our You'll Be Pro attraction, which in the first place was not inside Europa Park. So you actually had to exit the Europa Park, you had to board a bus shuttle, and then you had to drive for 10 minutes to a different location to experience your premium free roaming VR experience, which was great. No question about that. But it completely interrupted your experience in the theme park. So this means, and this is something that we've learned from other installations, example given in Hamburg at the Miniature Wunderland, they are at a AAA location. And this means that they have a lot of spontaneous walk-in guests. So that's the second thing that we've learned. Then the third thing that we've learned is packaging. So if you want to sell a ticket for a new kind of attraction, especially when it comes to new technologies, VR, MR, and such, think smart about how you package these tickets. So make it as easy as possible to your guests, to your customers, to get this ticket. Make it visible. And most importantly, make it the most obvious choose or the most obvious option to choose from. So this is something, again, that we've learned, for example, from the Miniature Wunderland, because they made the VR ticket, the ticket for their free roaming experience, they made this the most, the easiest option to choose from, because they really smartly packaged these tickets. And then the last thing I would say that we've learned is really think about the, sorry for my English, is it the state of mind or the mindset?
Yeah.
In which you are when you're experiencing or when you're trying to sell a ticket for a specific experience. What I mean with that is, you know, we all know that inside the theme park, every attraction competes with the big roller coasters. We experience this here at Europa Park every day. We have 23 hours of live entertainment shows per day. We have brilliant ice shows, brilliant artistic shows, and even the most brilliant ice skaters, they are constantly competing with the Voltron because it's just right next door.
Yeah.
And people come to ride the Voltron, right? What I mean with that is, inside a theme park, I would say that there's always a competition between different attractions and the time spent inside the park.
Yeah.
So whatever show, whatever attraction, whatever VR attraction maybe you have, it always is competing with the big roller coasters because people come to ride the roller coasters, right? And this makes it really hard for those attractions to shine next to the roller coasters compared to if you're in a different mindset. If you're more in an exploration or explorative mindset, such as an exhibition, for example. For example, if you're going to an exhibition, you're not thinking about, okay, what am I going to do next? What attraction am I going to experience next? No, because you're in a different state of mind. You're in this exploration phase. You want to really dive deep and get yourself immersed. And if you're in this kind of mindset, then a virtual reality attraction makes even more sense because it fits the state of mind that you're currently at. And it does not compete with other attractions that you want to visit after.
Yeah.
Hope this makes sense.
Yeah, no, it does absolutely. And it's, the thing that I always find I run out of time for shows when I'm in a theme park because I am a rides enthusiast. And I think especially when you come from the UK, somewhere like this, it's not on our doorstep. So the 2-3 days that we have here, we're like, oh, we've got to get on everything whilst we can. Yeah. And you do sometimes miss these extra experiences. Has it ever been an option to maybe keep them open later than the rides or something like that so that people don't have to lose their park day, but they still could do it afterwards?
Exactly. You nailed it. This is what we ultimately did.
Yeah.
So we decided, okay, let's put our VR attractions, make them accessible even if the park itself is closed. And if the park closes usually at, I'd say, 6-7-ish in the evening, then we have extended opening hours of the VR attractions. So, for example, until 10 p.m. or so, so that people, after having dinner, have the chance to experience those attractions even if the park itself is closed.
Yeah. Okay, that's cool. That's something to bear in mind then. If you come in to visit Europa Park there, you could go and do one of these experiences when it's closed in the evening and you're sat around going, what do we do now?
Right.
You could go and do that. I guess in terms of a cost, there is, especially an attraction that lays heavily on VR, there is going to be a cost implication of that compared to a traditional attraction, or is it not because it is digital? I don't know. How does it compare?
I would say steel is expensive.
Yeah.
Code is cheap. That is the definition of efficiency. But of course, the reality lies somewhere in between, right?
Yeah.
So the pure programming, of course, compared to one of the big and the major attractions if you compare it to the Voltron, for example, of course, this is just a fraction of the costs. But this is just one perspective. That's just only one part of the game, so to say. So the sheer programming, the coding of the content is only one side of the medal, right? So you need to think a lot, and subsequently you need to invest a lot in making the operations work. Of course, at the end of the day, still I would say compared to a big, a major ride attraction, still it's a lot cheaper. But you should not compare, how do you say that in English? Compare apples with peas?
Apples and pears.
Pears, sorry.
Yeah. But apples and peas works. they're still not that similar. Yeah, that makes sense.
But I mean, if you're looking outside, now we're facing the Christmas season. And just to give you an example, in a VR attraction or also in a mixed reality attraction, we can easily swap and change the content, and that means the story that we want to tell based on the season, for example, that we have. So we're coming from the Halloween season, so inside our VR attractions, it was easy to swap the content for a horror or a Halloween content. And now we're looking at the Christmas season, and now maybe we show a different content. So it's easy to adapt and change an existing attraction and adapt it to the season. It makes it pretty easy to change the content.
Yeah, that makes sense. You don't have to actually have loads of physical props to give it a really different feel. I know you're busy. I don't want to keep you very much longer. I'm just wondering, as an overall, what is the response to guests with the VR integration, the digital integration on classic attractions or new attractions? I guess the reaction is they love it, which is why you still have a job doing it. If everyone was like, no, we hate it. But what is the general sort of feedback that you get?
Still, the majority of our guests that try our VR or mixed reality attractions, these are first-time users. Mm-hmm. So they've never tried VR before or mixed reality before. So in most of the cases, we leave them really impressed and really convinced about what you can actually achieve and what kind of new stories you're able to tell with this technology. But honestly, we're still talking about technology, right? So, of course, it still glitches every now and then. I mean, we try our best to minimize this. But of course, still we're talking about the technology. Sometimes the tracking gets lost. Maybe the tracking is not 100%.
Not everyone always will get a perfect experience with technology because it's not infallible. So
exactly.
Yeah, okay. But generally, people are responsive to it. I mean, we all live in a very technology-dense world. We're all glued to our smartphones. Right. So really, that's just expanding out into the theme parks that we visit as well.
Exactly. And we want to make it as easy as possible for people to experience the technology firsthand, because it's, as a location-based entertainment, it's our job to provide the technology, even if there's no mass adoption yet. Looking at that from a theme park perspective, it's not the most important factor whether people have these headsets in their homes. On the contrary, I would say it gives us something that's really special to our offering, because only we have those headsets, for example, and only we have this technology. And I really like this idea that it could be us, the theme parks, giving access to these kind of technologies and make it really accessible to a lot of people. And this does mean that you don't have to get the latest headset. You don't need to purchase the latest headset for your living room.
Yeah.
Come to us, come to the theme park, and we give you a really low entry barrier access to this kind of technology, and we will show you how this could enhance your experience.
Yeah. So this might be the first place that you come and use it. And wow, what a place to come and use it. Before you go, I have one last question for you.
Just go ride it.
We do this on the podcast every time we have a guest. It's called Just Gotta Ride It. And it's where I put you on the spot and say, right, if every roller coaster in the world is going to get destroyed, you could only save one. Which roller coaster would you save that we should all go and ride? And it can be anyone you want. It doesn't have to be one at Europa Park. But I mean, I'm sure your employers are listening. But it's up to you. Which roller coaster have we all just got to ride?
If you ask me today, it's Voltron Nemero.
What? And I mean, look, I love that roller coaster. But from your point of view, what is so special about it?
I've never experienced something similar to that, because this is pure energy. And to me, it feels like, I still remember the first time I rode this, and I felt like, I don't know what just happened.
Yes, I had that exact same feeling.
What did just happen? Yeah. I was going forward, I was going back, upwards, downwards, really. And this sensation of pure energy, this is what really captivates me and still is captivating me every single time I ride this coaster.
Okay. Well, it's a good reason. We'll keep it safe. I'll put it in the special box. And Voltron has been saved by Marcus. Thank you so much for joining us on Parkcast. Thank you for all the work you're doing with Mach 1 and obviously Europa Park and all the technology you're putting in. And I'm sure when we come and visit Europa Park, we will see the benefit of your hard work. And we'll look forward to seeing in the future if your predictions have come true and we're all coming in wearing a pair of digital glasses and getting some different experiences.
We'll see. Thanks a lot.
If you have enjoyed today's episode and you haven't already, do hit subscribe so that you never miss a future episode. And if you'd like to leave us a review, I always appreciate those as well. For now, though, we've been Parkcast.
Parkcast. The UK's original theme park podcast.